Welcome to the most listened to golf in the world, the Fairways of Life show, on air, online, and around the world, with the most candid interviews, unforgettable stories, taking you beyond the ropes. Here's your host, New York Times best-selling author, Matt Adams.
And we welcome you into the Fairways of Life show on this Tuesday of the Players Week. You can tell that I am on the road. I'm outside of a place that we are renting, and the internet is not great here, but we're going to do the best we can on getting through all of it. We have much to get through today on this Tuesday, because today is the day that everything really kicks off in earnest at TPC Sawgrass. We are hearing reports, multiple reports at that, that the golf course is already running very, very fast. I'm not just talking about green speeds. I'm talking about the golf course itself. A little bit later on, we'll talk more about the speed of the golf course, the setup of the golf course, what the weather conditions are expected to be for the coming days, because if it is warm and if there's not a lot of rain in the forecast, then obviously that recipe is for even more speed as we move forward. Tee times are out for this Players. Let's take a look at some of those tee times to get you ready. Now, the tee times that have the asterisks on them, those are the ones that are the featured groups for PGA Tour Live. Sam Burns, Xander Schauffele, Tommy Fleetwood going out early, Victor Hovland, Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, Ludvig Åberg, Patrick Cantlay, Adam Scott, then Nick Taylor, Tom Kim, and Justin Rose. That's at 8:57 a.m. Billy Horschel, Sungjae Im, and Webb Simpson will be at 9:08. And then in the afternoon wave, Jake Knapp, Matthew Pavone, Nick Dunlop, which is a really cool group, isn't it? At 1:18 p.m. that we were all recently introduced to over the last few months. At 1:29 p.m., Hideki Matsuyama, Matt Fitzpatrick, and Max Homa. At 1:40 p.m., Scottie Scheffler, Ricky Fowler, and Justin Thomas. At 1:51 p.m., Wyndham Clark, Colin Morikawa, and Brian Harman. And then at 2:02, Tony Finau, Will Zalatoris, and Shane Lowry. Obviously, that's not everybody, but that's a pretty good look at it. And some of those groups, as I mentioned to you, are really compelling in terms of who would you want to watch. Now, granted, again, you can see if you have PGA Tour Live, you can see the stars there. Let me just jump to that for a second. Then I want to go back to this page, Andrew, and talk some more about these groups. But let's get you up to speed on when you can see the coverage. Now, I will talk about the network coverage on Golf Channel and NBC, because they start Thursday and Friday from 1 p.m. Eastern time. Saturday and Sunday, the coverage will be on NBC. You also can catch coverage on the streaming service Peacock. But PGA Tour Live from Thursday morning and Friday morning, for that matter, starts at 7:30 a.m. So it's nearly 12 straight hours of multi-channel coverage from 7:30 a.m. on Thursday morning all the way up until scheduled at 7 p.m., but obviously they can open that window up if they want to, given that it is digital. On Saturday from 8 a.m. and then Sunday, once again, from 7:30 p.m. So with that, if you wouldn't mind, Andrew, let's go back to the graphic that showed some of those notable tee times that I was just going over, because I think it provides, I think, a good fodder for discussion about who to keep an eye on this one. Now, one name that's not on that is Minwoo Lee. Minwoo Lee, in his debut at this event last year, finished in a tie for six. So he's one that I definitely think we should keep an eye on. I'm feeling something about Victor Hovland. I mentioned this, Dom, to you yesterday, that I think Victor Hovland is one to keep an eye on. Paired alongside of Rory McIlroy and Jordan Spieth, I think that's a really good group for them. Interesting, too, that Sam Burns, Xander Schauffele, and Tommy Fleetwood are together. Again, that's the tour putting together people that like to play with other players, and you can see it right there. Åberg, Cantlay, and Scott. Scott, of course, has won this before. Cantlay feels like a player that should have won this event because of the way that he hits the ball. We're going to be talking about, with our next guest coming up in just a little bit, about who this golf course fits, or is there a particular player that this golf course fits. Nick Taylor is an interesting one to me as well, a guy that's already won this year alongside of another young gun in Tom Kim and the steady veteran that is Justin Rose. Billy Horschel is another one. Lives up in the area, plays there often, feels like he should win alongside of Im and Simpson. Simpson, not so much, but Sungjae Im, I think, is definitely poise. Jake Knapp, Matthew Pavone, Nick Dunlap. Not as much with Nick Dunlap. He seems to have come off the boil from his win earlier since he has turned professional, which to some extent I can understand because he's still getting used to the flow and currents of the PGA Tour. But Jake Knapp and Matthew Pavone, of those two, Pavone in particular strikes me as having an almost swagger in his belief. Jake Knapp's kind of one of those quiet players that seems to perform. Matsuyama's shown form, Fitzpatrick has shown flashes, and Homa's one of the favorites in my mind. Scotty Scheffler, I think he's also one of the favorites in my mind. I know that Scheffler is a defending champion, and I know that Scheffler won last week. No one has ever defended this players, and it's in 50 years of the event, right? But it is also very, very hard to win the week after you have had victory again, but Scotty Scheffler's not like anybody else. So he's one very much that I keep an eye on. Fowler's not doing anything for me right now. Maybe I'll be wrong. I know he's won these grounds before, but I've just not seen enough from him to believe that this is going to be his week. Justin Thomas, of course, another past winner here, has shown form that I think can translate into this week. Wyndham Clark, Colin Morikawa, Brian Harman. Of those three, I think Brian Harman is the one that could carve his way around the golf course with the best proficiency. And then the last group in our notable tee times, Tony Finau, Will Zalatoris, and Shane Lowry. I think Lowry and Zalatoris are two that you have to keep a very, very close eye on. There is no doubt about that. Now, as to who's going to be speaking to the media today, we have an absolutely packed schedule over the next couple of days. At 11 a.m. this morning, PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan will speak. This is the first time that he has held a press conference since last August. So I'm very, very curious what the commissioner is going to say. And I would ask all you guys for the discussion board or otherwise, which I'll check in with Dom about the question of the day, the discussion board in a moment. But I am curious, what do you guys want to hear from the commissioner? That is not necessarily the same question as what do you expect to hear, but what do you want to hear from the commissioner when he speaks at 11 a.m. this morning? The anticipation is that what we're going to hear is that we're very, very happy with SSG and the establishment of PGA Tour Enterprises and establishment of a new board, and we continue discussions with PIF. Okay. For my part, I'm not trying to lead you guys, but for my part, I'm hoping for a little bit more than just a status quo, which we've been given through other mediums. I'm hoping that there's a little bit more meat on the bone. At 2 p.m., all these times, again, are Eastern. Xander Schauffele will be addressing the media at 2:45. Patrick Cantlay will come in at 3 p.m. Scotty Scheffler. I did think it was interesting when you look at those times for the press conferences. They're in 15-minute bites. That's not exactly a huge amount of time to be addressing some of the top players in the world. On Wednesday, Rory McIlroy will be speaking at approximately 7:50 a.m. from what they call the media scrum area. That's where they stand up with a microphone. 8 to 9 a.m., they call it the first timers will be coming in, some of whom are already winners on the PGA Tour. That will be taking place in the back lawn. And then the second half of the first timers will be from 9 to 10 a.m. At 10:45 a.m., Victor Hovland will address the media. At 1 p.m., Justin Thomas. And then at 2 p.m., it will be Max Homa addressing the assembled. So with that, Dom, let me turn to you and find out what we're hearing from the people already this morning. And have you worked on a question of the day?
Good morning, Matt. Yes, I have. Question of the day is simple today as we are really getting into the week. Who will win the Players' Championship? It's that simple. Okay. And it's a write-in question. You write in, you tell us very early in the running here right now. But we've got at least four people saying Scotty Scheffler. We've got a Rory McIlroy in the mix. We've got a Matthew Pavone in the mix. I'm still cruising down here looking through. There's some folks commenting on Jay Monahan's press conference, what to expect or not to expect about that. I would just like to see at this point something that I've been saying to you for years, which is just simply transparency. I would just like more info, more details, just what is going on. Just say what's going on, what's actually going on, and that's it. And if some of those answers are, I don't know, that's okay too. Just say that instead of beating around the bush. We got some folks saying Will Zalatoris just came in just now as an option. Another Scotty Scheffler. So the folks are writing in, Matt. They're letting us know who they think has a good chance to win this week. It's a very strong field. Right now, it's I believe it's 18 of the top 20 in the world are on hand. So it's quite a strong field. I was looking at stats earlier for myself, and I was talking to Andrew behind the scenes there. And Andrew gave us his pick. And Andrew's been doing this long enough, Matt, that Andrew knows, he kind of knows what it takes to win these huge championships. And he understands mm-hmm. the putting, the around the green. And he threw a name out there, which I did not see coming, Matt. But he backed it up. Aaron Baddeley is first right now on tour in putting and fifth in strokes gained around the green coming into this event. Doesn't that surprise you? I tell you, it surprised the hell out of me. I had no idea. He's also ready for it, Matt? No. Fourth in scrambling on tour.
Well, that matches up to his strokes gained around the green. Yeah, that doesn't.
Yeah, but
that
it doesn't matter.
Really...
All those things together, that's like holy cow. That's didn't anticipate that. Now I would have never picked him in my life, but Andrew picked him, and now I'm like, wow, that's a
no.
That's a
I wouldn't pick him either. Where is he with strokes gain off the tee? Where is he with strokes gain approach? Because if a player has a very, usually the association is that if your strokes gain approach is awful, then you have to be pretty good with strokes gained around the green. You have to be very good with strokes gained scrambling. And if you are, that means you're chipping it close to the hole, which means you're going to be better and less in strokes gained putting because you have fewer putts than everybody else. You have a lot of one putts. In other words, you're way up in the stats of fewest putts. So, no, he wouldn't be my pick because
the answer to your question is very bad. In those other categories.
I wasn't sure of that, but that was the indication that I had.
I'm not going to disparage Aaron and tell everybody what the numbers are. They can look them up, but they're not great.
No. Dom, please tell me what the numbers are. That's why I asked you for them.
Tee to green, he's 146th. Off the tee, he's 173rd. And approach to the green, he's 145th.
All right. That's what we hear there. Okay. So
that's why
Andrew what did you hear?
Does the graphics.
What are you hearing from the people in terms of what they hope to hear from the commissioner today?
I think clarity. I think at this point, is it really surprising to hear from anybody, whether you're on the live side, whether you're on the tour side, or whether you're up the middle? I think what everybody on all sides of this is looking for at this point is just clarity. There's a lot of gray area. There's a lot of dragging your feet on all sides. And a lot of, well, what if this or what if that? Or maybe we're going to try this or we're working on that. And I think people are just looking for clarity. And they'd like the dust to settle. And I mean, I don't know where you stand, Matt, but I would anticipate the dust will not be settling anytime soon.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, my hope is that we get more than the status quo report. Because what do we know as we sit here this morning? What we know is that there's been some $1.5 billion from the Strategic Sports Group led by the Fenway Sports organization that has been invested in the PGA Tour. We know who the members of the new PGA Tour Enterprises board are going to be, both from a player's side, and we know that from the board member's side, which you can see illustrated right here. So we know who these individuals are. We know that they have deep, deep roots in sports at a major, major level, whether you're talking about Major League Baseball, whether you're talking about the Premier League, in some cases you're talking about the NFL, whether you're talking about the NBA, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They are deep in various sports. What we don't know is the status with the Public Investment Fund. We do know that since the negotiations were apparently commenced last June, that the Public Investment Fund has continued to grow. And they aggressively pursued and were able to sign John Rahm. So notwithstanding all of the good news from a PGA Tour perspective, I'm sure as it will be presented, that they have $1.5 billion in their coffer and that they have this plan together that is meant to keep players happy by paying out some of the top name players and then kind of salting out money to others that will say, hey, stay here because there's a lot of money here two, we don't have a clear indication, and there are strong rumors already starting to circulate about other top players, players that 6 months ago we would have been shocked if they left for LIV, that might be on the menu for LIV to continue to pursue. So as late as just a few days ago, we heard from the likes of Webb Simpson, who's amongst those names that are top leaders of the PGA Tour players side, now saying, no, we definitely need an agreement with PIF so that the game can come back together. And we've heard similar comments made from very, very prominent people around the game, even outside of the PGA Tour, talking about their other governing bodies, etc. So my hope is today to go back to my side, and I hope that doesn't diminish anyone else expressing their opinion, because I want to know what you guys think too. My hope is that we get real concrete information. We get something more than discussions are continuing. I think it would have been great if they had Yasser on site. Bring him in. Talk to us about where everything stands. I mean, really lay everything out on the table. Dom, you talk constantly about your desire for transparency and what everyone does in sports and otherwise. Wouldn't that be a great place to start? Have them both sitting next to each other again and talking about how is this good? Why is this good? Where do we stand? What do we hope and anticipate in terms of a timeline on this thing again? So I'd like to hear something about that. I will talk to you about winners picks here in just a second, because I want to get that before we go to our break and welcome back our first guest. We haven't had a chance to talk to this since the news came out, but as you guys know, Tiger is not at this Players. Tiger told us he wanted to play once a month. Tiger withdrew from the Genesis with the flu. We weren't sure what that meant, other than the fact that he said he had the flu. I assume he had an upset stomach or what have you, but anyway, that's all the information we had. He's won 8 times at Bay Hill. Didn't play. He's won multiple times here at the Players, not playing. So it's very interesting, because I've told you this many times before, and I've said it with a grin, that the information that we get from Tiger Woods, that we take lock, stock, and barrel, and we say, this is great, this is going to be all different, and he's ready for this week, and he's ready for this season, and then reality doesn't match up to it. Many times over the years, we've had Tiger tell us that he feels great, he feels better than he's ever felt, and then the following Monday, he has surgery. So I don't know what to make of where Tiger Woods stands right now, and it makes you wonder if the more reality starts to speak for itself versus press conference speak and or platitudes and or hopes and wishes, that it becomes a Tiger that becomes further and further adrift from the shoreline of hope that he can actually contend anywhere, which sounds shocking because we're talking about Tiger Woods. So yeah, we all can wish that Tiger Woods was in a different place in time, but what we're seeing from Tiger Woods right now does not bode well. We're already in March. We know obviously he's going to want to play at Augusta National. But the reps that Tiger will constantly talk about, he doesn't talk about them in his pre-conference that often. He usually talks about how much he's practiced and how close he is and how he's playing golf with his friends. But then after he shoots a poor round or misses a cut or what have you, he looks at the media with his hands up and goes, oh, I haven't got the reps. What do you guys expect? I can only do what my body allows me to do. Okay, so we'll wait and see what Tiger's body will allow him to do versus what we've been told he wants to do, which apparently he's unable to at this time. Okay, so Dom, why don't you give me your 3 picks for the Players quickly? I'd like to know who you could give me your win, place, draw, or you can
I get 3 picks? Are you giving me 3 picks? Did you just say that?
I'd like to know who you think are the top 3 players that are going to contend. If you want to pick one from those 3, that you say, this is the guy that's going
to
win.
I'm happy to give you 3 picks.
Okay.
So my first pick, and the person I think will win, it's going to sound ridiculous because I feel like I've said his name so many times in the last 5 years, but I actually think the stats back it up, at least for the moment, is Jordan Spieth. I actually think Jordan Spieth is playing quite well right now, and I anticipate he's going to have a very good Players Championship. And, you know, I'm excited to see what he does. I mean, one of the things that I noticed when I was going over his stats, Matt, it's going to sound weird when I say it out loud, but he is inside the top 100 on tour in driving accuracy, which is like, oh, wow, good for him. It actually is good for him. He hasn't been inside the top 100 in accuracy off the tee in 7 years. So he's reining it in. I mean, as much as he can, he's reining it in a little bit. And that's going to bode well. He's also, I mean, I can list it all off. It's crazy stats, obviously, but let's see here. He is top. Oh, that's the wrong year. Hold on. That's 20. All right, here it is. He's fourth on tour in strokes gained total. He's seventh around the green. He's 11th in putting. He's top 25 in scrambling. There's a lot of things on song for him right now. And if you've been watching him lately, he's been playing pretty well. He had kind of a crappy round last week on Saturday, but it happens. It happens to everybody. So my number
where
one
is
pick
he?
would be Jordan Spieth.
And where's Jordan with strokes gained approach?
Strokes gained approach right now is 101st. But he's still on the positive end of strokes gained approach. He's not losing shots to the field right now. So if he strikes his irons well this week, I, like I said, he's my pick right now, my number one pick. But
okay,
if,
so Dom, quickly
have to
give
pick
me your
a couple
two?
Other names.
Yeah,
you know,
really
Andrew,
quickly,
put the tee
please.
Times up for me. I like Mark Hubbard because he's a friend and he's a really good putter. Come on, Mark Hubbard. And I also think if you're looking at that tee times and those feature groups there, I actually think I like Tom Kim as well.
All right,
so
Tom Kim are your three. Other. I'm going to give you. We're going to give it to you really quickly because I have to go to break here. Victor Hovland, Minwoo Lee, and Will Zalatoris are the three that I am picking. Of those three, I think that Victor Hovland has the best chance to win because of what we're seeing from Victor Hovland over the last 6 months in terms of how he's playing, the control that he has with his ball flighting is very impressive to me. The improvement that he has with his short game, pitching, chipping in particular, have impressed me tremendously. I think he's going to get a very positive bump from what he did at the Ryder Cup as well. I mentioned Minwoo Lee with his tie for six in his debut at this event last year. He's striking the ball well. He obviously has great confidence. And Will Zalatoris, just because the form that he has coming in from a long time away. So those will be my three. What do you guys think? We'll touch base on that in just a little while. The Fairways of Life show is presented in part by the PGA Tour Superstore, the number one golf retailer from coast to coast. If you need it, you can find it inside of their big, beautiful stores. We'll be back with a special guest on the Fairways of Life show right after this.
Relax. Easy now. Find your happy place. It's all in the hips. Just tap it in.
Yes!
Find the latest clubs and apparel at Golf's Happy Place, the PGA Tour Superstore.
In Ireland, golf is more than just a game. Come and experience our world-famous links courses and our world-famous parkland courses, all set alongside world-famous scenery. And visit our world-famous historic sites. And while you're here, enjoy our world-famous hospitality. Fill your heart with Ireland at ireland.com/golf.
It screams. It tracks. It's soft. It reacts. It is the Bridgestone Tour B with a game-changing reactive cover designed to spring faster off your driver and stick longer to your wedges. Try Bridgestone's Tour Bs, the Tour Ball reinvented.
The Gen 6 iron is a culmination of everything that we have learned as a team, the absolute best golf club I've ever hit. It's something special. Say hello to the new PXG Gen 6 iron. The longest, most accurate irons we've ever made. They go higher and farther than any iron that I have hit to date, and they're so easy to hit. Super excited for the consumer to try this. They're gonna love them.
PXG, nobody makes golf clubs the way we do, period.
Baseball? Nah. Football? Done it. I think I'm gonna go after the PGA Tour.
Bo, you're gonna need the right equipment company.
I think I got that.
You know, Tour Edge backs all their clubs with a lifetime warranty.
I know.
They ship all their premium custom clubs in 48 hours.
I know.
All their premium clubs are hand-built in the USA.
I know.
You know, Tour Edge has won 35 times out here.
Guys, I know.
Pound for pound, nothing comes close.
Boyne Golf provides the ultimate world-class golf destination with 10 championship-caliber courses spanning three resorts. Centered in Michigan's northern Lower Peninsula, the courses are the products of some of the game's masters, including Robert Trent Jones Sr., Arthur Hills, and Donald Ross. From the all-inclusive vacation packages, elite instruction with the Boyne Golf Academy, tournaments, and so much more, Boyne Golf truly offers an unrivaled Michigan golf vacation experience. Just log on to boynegolf.com. As we welcome you back to the Fairways of Life show, it is cool up here. What the forecast will be for the remainder of the week and that we will talk about even more. Our guest is Mark Carnevale, the 1992 Arnold Palmer Award recipient. That is for the Rookie of the Year. Carney, we appreciate you taking the time to join us this morning. Have you had a chance to see what the weather forecast is expected to be for the next few days? Anything crazy coming our way?
I don't think so. Maybe some possible rain over the weekend, but I really haven't really paid much. It's better than the outlook when I was down in Orlando. It looked like there was a good chance of rain Thursday through Sunday, and it's kind of diminishing and going off. So that's key for this golf course as they really protect it throughout the year, which I understand, but they try to get it in the top shape as possible. And little what I know, having not been out there a lot, but I was out there and I've seen sort of the overseed and everything over the last 3 or 4 weeks. It looks like it's going to be spectacular, and I know they're going to do everything they can to get this golf course, which they tend to do every year, in just the best shape these players will find throughout the year.
Yeah, I'm curious about a sharper definition of what that means in terms of how they get the golf course. What do you anticipate, once we get to Thursday, obviously, what do you anticipate in terms of the length of the rough? And if it's going to be dry, as that forecast just showed us, it would say to me that they're going to continue to speed up the golf course. Is that all in the recipe?
I think so. That's what they would like. They want this golf course to play fast, and that means the fairways and the green complexes. I think the other thing, Matt, over the years, one of the things about TPC Sawgrass and what Pete Dye, his design, and we know that he makes you think of other things than what you're looking at. I don't think you're going to see the rough, as certainly not as long as we saw last week. What they want is the rough, and my understanding through over the years, they want the rough long enough where you have to think about taking a chance. So, you know, it's not going to be like we see at Augusta. It's going to be a little longer than that, but when you hit it in there, they want you to take some risks. And I think that's where this golf course becomes a big challenge is when you do that, because as we know, there's so much trouble around this golf course. And I think that that's what they're going to try to get it to. And that's what it looked like it was. Again, the last time I was out on the golf course, just kind of driving around, was about 3 weeks ago. And it looks like they're going to be able to do that. And the fact that we haven't had a lot of rain over that time period is certainly going to help.
I want to talk to you more about the golf course coming up in just a moment. And I know you're heading out there today to get a look at it. But first, what will your responsibilities be this week, Mark? How can we see and hear what you're doing?
I'll be doing PGA Tour Live this week. I'll be on the course on stream 2. And I know on Thursday and Saturday, I'll be out with 8 for 18 in the morning, and then I'll do 9 with a group in the afternoon. And on Friday and Sunday, I'll just do 18 in the morning. So it's a busy week as always. It's an exciting week, and it's going to be a lot of fun out there.
A featured group coverage in from Mark Carnevale coming up. So, Carney, before we get into the specifics of this week, I know we touched on it just a little bit, but as I promised you, I will circle back around to it again as well. The commissioner will be speaking at 11 a.m. this morning. If Mark Carnevale was the commissioner of golf at large, not just the PGA Tour, how would you describe the state of the game right now?
Confused. I think there's a lot of uncertainty. I think that... I live here in Ponte Vedra Beach, Matt, and I've been a member of the tour since 1992. I don't have any idea what's going on. I have heard a couple of things that I think they're trying to get the players to understand, and not that they ever thought it wasn't, but obviously each of these players are their own businesses. But I think one of the things they're trying to get the players to buy into and understand is that the PGA Tour in general is a business. And obviously for years and years and years, it's been a 501c3. I may be wrong about the actual clarification, but it's been a charitable organization. And I think one of the things that, with everything that they're doing, and again, I don't have any, words verbatim from anybody, but I know that what I've heard them talk about, and I've heard different people talk about, is that they're trying to get the players to understand that this truly is a business and it needs to be profitable. And I think that's part of it. But in my opinion, the best players in the game have to play together. I think that's what sort of separates golf from some other sports at times. Certainly you have to think, but when you have all these events, you want the best to play together. The issue you have, again, is you've got players who are loyal to the PGA Tour, and you've got players that went to LIV. And again, as I've said many times, I have no problem with someone doing that, but there are ramifications with every decision. I think that the biggest thing for me now is there seems to be a downtrend in the fans as far as their interest in the game. And I think there's, for the longest time, Matt, golf was sort of immune from all the, I want to say not the bickering, but kind of the small stuff that a lot of the other professional sports have dealt with. And now with what LIV has done in paying these players a lot of money to go play golf, I think it has turned a lot of fans off. And that's my opinion. I don't know if stats or information backs that up, but that's what I hear from a lot of people.
Mark, I'm curious, when Commissioner Monahan speaks to the media today, from your perspective as a winner on the PGA Tour, as I mentioned, the Arnold Palmer Award recipient, what would you like to hear? In a perfect world, what would you like to hear from the commissioner today?
I want to hear some sort of outline, what they have planned. Now, they've had a lot of time to go through this. And then when the commissioner made the announcement last June at the RBC Canadian Open, it was a very undefined, in my opinion, a very undefined outline of what was going to happen going forward. I think players and myself, as still a member of the PGA Tour, want to understand what they hope to have happen. Is there a path to what they want to accomplish? There just needs to be more definition in my mind.
All right, Rory McIlroy had some comments. I'm going to, in fact, play them for you in just a second to get your reaction about making fields smaller and making it even more elite. It was met with a variety of different responses. So let's go back to what Rory said just a couple days ago.
I'm all for making it more cutthroat, more competitive. I'm like, probably won't be very popular for saying this, but I'm all for less players and less tour cards and the best of the best. Why wouldn't I speak my mind? I guess. You ask me my opinion and I give it to you. I'm not going to stand up here and lie to you. I guess my thing is I'm all for more cutthroat and more competitive and trying to give pathways to the younger generation. So through Korn Ferry, through PGA Tour U, through, like, I'd rather have more of a, like, yeah, instead of, I feel like there's a lot of categories on tour that, people are sort of still benefiting off what they did like 5 or 10 years ago. Yeah. And like, I feel like the most competitive professional golf tour in the world, you should have to come out and prove yourself year after year after year. Yeah. So I would say, take the best events from all over the world and try to create something through that, because those events still have history and legacy and tradition and all the things that are still very important in golf. I think, there's been some experiments with, creating new tournaments out of nothing, and I don't know if they've really captured the imagination of the general public, and that's what you want. You want to, like, why is the Masters the Masters? Why is this tournament this tournament? Why are the more historical tournaments the ones that are revered so much in our game? It's because they have history and people remember Ben Hogan winning or Jack Nicklaus or these guys. And it's all about trying to trying to bridge the, I guess trying to bridge the present back to the past and the people that came before us. And, you know, I think that that's important.
All right, so Mark Carnevale, I'm curious what your reaction is to the words of Rory McIlroy there.
Well, I can't remember if I said this on your show or not, Matt, but I think ultimately the resolution of all this is almost to create like a Premier League of golf. I think you may, the numbers, whatever number you come up with, whether it's 70, 80, 60, I think if you're going to do that, and Rory mentioned the events around the world, and I don't know the number, whether it's 10, whether it's 12, because then you would include the major events. I think the one solution for something like that is that you have this Premier League of golf, and what you're doing, and as he was talking about all these different tours, they all feed into one thing. So you've got the PGA Tour over here, you got the DP World Tour over here, and I think you're going to, a possible solution is that basically, say you take a number of 20 players that get, if you had 70 players, 20 players get relegated every season, and 10 players off the DP World Tour and 10 players off the PGA Tour that come and go. And, you know, players have an opportunity to work themselves up there. Now, you know, do you decide that those top players are based on world ranking? I don't know. I think certainly players that have done things over the year are important, but there's other ways to give them access, like Rory was saying. If I see that as the only way, if you end up combining everything, Matt. And again, I have no information that this is true or not. I think this is the reality of the game. If you want the top players to play all the time, I think that would be something that might exist, or the possibility exists. I understand that. It was funny. I was out at the Genesis, and of course I worked the Pebble Beach. I worked Genesis. I worked Bay Hill, and I was talking to one of the tournament referees, and I said, you know, when I was playing, I wouldn't like the fact that there were 70 players and there was a cut, but broadcasting, it's pretty good when it's a smaller field. And, you know, is it more competitive? I don't know. I think we haven't seen it enough. Like Rory says, we don't know if it's going to be competitive enough, but I think if ultimately there is some resolution to getting the best players back together to play on a regular basis, it wouldn't shock me if there's something along those lines.
Yeah, I mean, for me, Carney, the thing that I'm not as comfortable with is that there seems to be a general train of thought right now in the game that the top players, the stars of the game, were almost born into the position, and to a certain extent that the FedEx Cup points and these signature events are structured in such a way that the rich get richer. I think your comments about the pathways for other players are well-founded, because part of the thing that I find enjoyable in the game of golf is watching the ascent of young players. Now, we've seen that with Dunlap. We've seen that with Jake Knapp, but those are outliners. Those are the rare ones that we get a chance to see. And I hope that there are opportunities where we can see players evolve. I hope that there are opportunities where we can see larger fields. I hope there are opportunities where there's more equity in terms of the point distribution, because I think it's hard to win on the PGA Tour, regardless of where they're at. And to that point, even when we're talking about this massive sum of money that came in from the group called the Strategic Sports Group, they're talking about a huge sum of whether it's that amount of money or the potential second $1.5 billion going towards a very, very small group of stars. I understand why they're doing it, because they want to make it attractive to them in the marketplace when they can make other choices, as you duly noted. But I'm wondering, let's go back to where you were. You mentioned it when you were playing actively. When you were out there as a guy that was grinding it out, to see how much is being invested in just the top guys, At some point, don't you look at it and say, well, you know, what happens if I don't have the opportunities? How am I going to be able to evolve to the point where I can compete at the same level as those guys? It just, it seems to me, with all due respect, that there's a level of imbalance.
I absolutely agree with you, Matt. When I played this game, it was never for the money. I mean, I loved it, and obviously I made a living off it, and now I make a living off of that based on what I had done and the ability and the, certainly the confidence that people have in having me work as a broadcaster. The thing that scares me is that it's becoming more of a greed thing, I think. And that's, you know, as I mentioned that before, I think that's what's turning maybe some golf fans off. It's going to be a challenge as to how they do this. As I said, it's, you know, I mean, even myself, I mean, I'm sitting there and, you know, the announcement made and, okay, we're going to try to take care of the guys that are out here and then the future guys. But, you know, think about the people that have made, helped make the tour, mold the tour to what it is. That's important. I think we can't get away from what golf represents as far as a facilitator for charities and the raising of money for charities, because I think that's what separated golf for such a long time over the years. All these tournaments generated money for their communities, which is something that, having been a tournament director, I understand a lot more than a lot of players understand. And to me, that was an important part of it. And I think when it comes entirely about money, it loses something. It loses some of its character. I think it loses some of its passion. And again, I have no problem. I mean, the best players in the world are just phenomenal, and they do so many things. And each of these players do so many things to benefit people. But what I don't want to just see that it becomes beneficial to them, because that's and maybe that's not the right word. I mean, as a whole, I want it to be extremely beneficial. But when it becomes so selfish, it you start to look like all the other sports, and that's what I don't want. I mean, there's always a changing environment. There's always a changing, definition and focus of what, you know, who are we trying to attract? And obviously, you know, life has evolved, the world has evolved in a lot of different areas, but that's what the purity of the game of golf, I don't want to see that go. And I just have a fear that with what I would consider some greed, I mean, how much is enough? At what point, how much is enough? It's entertainment. And I understand trying to put a dollar value on the entertainment, and I think that's very important. But I just don't want the game of golf to lose what I truly think it represents.
Carney, when we look at a sampling of people who have won this year on the PGA Tour, it goes to what I was saying in terms of ascension and the fun that I have in watching it happen. But the variety from, you know, Nick Dunlap to Jake Knapp, Matthew Pavone, Nick Taylor, Austin Eckroat, young players or first-time winners, however you want to define it. Some people that have come back after having not won in a long time, like Grayson Murray. Yeah, maybe it's a reflection of diluted fields on the PGA Tour that these other players can break through. But again, we didn't define that. That's the currents of where the game is right now. The players are going out and teeing it up and playing the best they can against the field that they're facing. But it is a great deal of variety. I guess the simplest way to ask you is what do you think's happening on the PGA Tour right now that we're getting introduced or reintroduced to so many faces?
I think there are a lot of good players out there, and it continues. I think all those pathways that we talked about, I mean, Jake Knapp, I mean, what an unbelievable story. I mean, the kid qualified at the Farmers as back in 2015, and he was finished top five there, and he goes on to win in Mexico. I think it provides hope that for people that love this game and are passionate about golf, that yes, even though maybe you're not a McIlroy or a Scheffler, there are opportunities. And I think that's the beauty of the game, and that's the beauty of the PGA Tour, because you don't get that over at LIV. I mean, you get these stories. I mean, I had a chance, obviously, to follow Sammy Valimaki in Mexico, who I had never really heard of. And what a great story that is. And Nikolai Højgaard. And it just, golf provides so many avenues. You mentioned Nick Dunlap and the stories. Look, there were a lot of the top players in the world in those fields that those guys yeah. won. So, I mean, how do you separate it and say, well, they haven't earned the right to play in those bigger events? I think that's the problem. But that's, to me, that's always been the beauty of the PGA Tour and what the tour has done through Korn Ferry and the PGA Tour Americas and everything. And I think, and as I've mentioned to you, I think the PGA Tour University is an unbelievable avenue for players to get to the tour. I mean, Ludvig Åberg, who again, we've seen what he can do, and they're going to continue to come from there. And I think that's so important. And it's, you know, back when they had qualifying, you know, the full qualifying, Matty, you always, you know, I guess you could probably call me one of those, you know, sort of Cinderella stories because, you know, I didn't play a lot of amateur golf growing up, played collegiately, and it took me a long time to get to the PGA Tour. Those stories create interest in the game. And yes, mm-hmm. fans love the top players, but they also like those stories. And we're seeing a lot of them this year, and I think it's absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, I think it's definitely been a great deal of fun. There is no doubt about that. When we come back, we're going to have more fun with Mark Carnevale. I want to get back to talking to him about the golf course, the design philosophy of this Pete Dye golf course. What are the lines that you take off the tee? How much does Pete Dye implant doubt into your mind as a player? All that and more as the Fairways of Life show continues on this Tuesday of Players Week.
Yes, hello world, huh?
And with one subtle hello, Tiger began an amazing and unthinkable career.
I've done it for 20 years now with Bridgestone. It allows me to play an aggressive style around the greens, and it's allowed me to win a lot of tournaments.
Bridgestone Golf, proud to be part of your journey.
Boyne Golf provides the ultimate world-class golf destination with 10 championship-caliber courses spanning three resorts. Centered in Michigan's northern Lower Peninsula, the courses are the products of some of the game's masters, including Robert Trent Jones Sr., Arthur Hills, and Donald Ross. From the all-inclusive vacation packages, elite instruction with the Boyne Golf Academy, tournaments, and so much more, Boyne Golf truly offers an unrivaled Michigan golf vacation experience. Just log on to boynegolf.com.
I think when you're training for other sports or why most people go to the gym is so that they can like have muscles and, you know, be strong and be healthy. And a lot of the reason why they struggle to play golf is their body doesn't move properly for them to be able to hit a golf ball. And when you're training for golf, it's a little bit different because you're focused more on flexibility and mobility and being strong in motion. When you're able to kind of have a warm up and have a workout routine and kind of gradually build up to where you're training your body to move properly, yeah, you're going to get a lot of big dividends on the golf course.
Easy now. Find your happy place. It's all in the hips. Just tap it in.
Yes!
Find the latest clubs and apparel at Golf's Happy Place, the PGA Tour Superstore.
What if we started a company and the company was under no time constraints, no financial constraints? The one constraint is their clubs had to be exceptional performers and much better than any other alternative. I was told time and again, it'll never work. It worked like a house of fire. And I'll tell you what, I think our customers love it. BXG, nobody makes golf clubs the way we do, period.
Stride by Zero Friction, the first of its kind personal caddy. Walk in comfort and style with Stride's remote and follow me technology. The Stride handles almost any terrain, and its 54-hole range will last all day. The lightweight design and removable front wheels makes it simple to handle. Plus, it easily fits golf carts. Order yours and save. Visit zerofriction.com/stride or scan the QR code to order yours today. Stride, your personal caddy.
Only a couple days away from everything getting underway right there at TPC Sawgrass, the stadium course. Surely there will be many, many surrounding the par 3 17th. A PGA Tour Live's coverage on ESPN Plus starts at 7:30 a.m. on Thursday morning. Mark Carnevale will be a part of the featured group coverage of the event this year. Carney, is it too soon to ask you who you might be assigned to? Do you have any sense of what groups you'll be following yet?
Well, I know for sure in the afternoon on Thursday, I'll be out with Scottie Scheffler, Fowler, and Justin Thomas. Is that? I can't remember. I know that the main feed will be on Victor Hovland, Rory McIlroy, and Jordan Spieth in the morning. And I think I'm either going to be with the Sam Burns Schauffele group and Fleetwood or the Ludwig Oberg and Cantlay and Adam Scott. It's one of those two groups I think I'll be with in the morning, but I know in the afternoon I'll be out with Scotty, Ricky Fowler, and Justin Thomas.
That sounds very, very cool. It sounds like a lot of fun. And for those of you that are answering the question of the day, I can give you this assessment that for the vast majority of you, you feel as though it's going to come down to the following. First position, Scottie Scheffler. Second is Victor Hovland. And third is Max Homa. So, Carney, I want to pick your brain from a philosophy standpoint about this golf course. It's taking me years to come to terms with it. I struggle a lot with many Pete Dye designs. And my curiosity about this golf course is that, what is the philosophy? Can you describe a philosophy for it? And I'm not sure how to ask this fairly, but is the golf course actually fair to play? Is it more of a mental chess game than it is the physical act of putting the ball where you have to?
Well, first, I need to clarify. I have very much a love-hate relationship with TPC's Sawgrass Stadium course. It is more of a chess game, without question. I can't say that I'm a big fan of Pete Dye golf courses, and I'm not a big fan of this golf course in the sense of I don't really like to play it. It beats you up. But at the same time, I think it's a great venue for this competition, because if you look over the history, Matt, there's no consistent sort of a mark of the player that wins. What I would say is, as I said, it's a chess match. It is about diversion, or how Pete Dye makes you look away from what you need to do. Pete Dye has always made you challenge the trouble in order to be successful on this golf course. There are so many tees on this golf course that points you away from where you really need to hit the golf ball. It's such a visual challenge. And what that does throughout a round of golf is it beats you up mentally, and you have to remain focused. But what I've learned over the years, and this is a case with a lot of golf courses, Matt, you have to play this backwards. You have to start at the green complexes, and these players and caddies have an idea where the hole locations will be for all four rounds. I mean, they're pretty similar over the years. And then you play back from that. You play, so if the hole location, say, for example, and I'm trying to just, pick a good hole, maybe, 14, and it's a back left hole location. You have to challenge the right side in those mounds and moguls. But at the same, if you get too far right, then you get in those mounds and moguls, and it becomes a challenge. Where if it's maybe a front right hole location, you can challenge the left side there. That's what I tell anyone I've ever known that's played this golf course, any players I've talked to that really haven't played here much. You really have to go from green to fairway to tee in order to figure out, I think, how to play this golf course successfully. Have long hitters won here? Absolutely. Have short hitters won here? Absolutely. Guys, I would consider him short, but shorter than the norm. I will say this, over the years, I think iron players, good ball strikers, and players that hit a lot of greens in regulation tend to succeed here. You have to have not only a great short game, but you have to have a great short game imagination around this golf course. But I will say this, that if you look at the history and, you know, whatever stats you want to do, and I'm not a strokes game guy, and I'll be the first one to tell you that, but if you look at fairways hit, greens in regulation, if you look through the years, the players that have won here, I think have probably been the ones who have played, have led or been top to the lead in all those categories.
Fascinating. It's actually a brilliant explanation, Carney, and you've modified some of my thinking on this. I am excited to see the way that plays out amongst the various players. And one of the thoughts that just popped in my mind as you're describing all this is that, and this is probably something that I would guess that bookies never take into account, but how important a veteran caddy would be on a player's shoulder and their relationship to listen to that caddy that's going, this is a deception here. Here's the line that you really should be thinking about on that point of focus.
Yeah, I mean, without question, it is a challenge. I mean, I play it with guys. I maybe don't play it until after the tournament is over, because from October when they oversee through the tournament, it's all cart path only. And even though I love golf, I don't love golf that much to go out there and walk from the cart under the, because it's a hard golf course to walk that way. I mean, I have to play that way. And I say that jokingly because I don't play as much anymore, Matty. But it is a challenge. And again, I respect Pete Dye to the utmost. His imagination with design, I give him that. I just don't happen to be a fan of Pete Dye golf courses because I just think that at times it's too penal. I mean, they still, and I hated the fact they went back to some of these bunkers on this golf course, Matty, that I could barely get into. And now you've got to actually make a swing out of them. But that's his trait. That's, you know, you saw that up at Whistling Straits. You see it a lot of some of his other golf courses. And look, like anything else, like players that used to complain about the U.S. Open with the way it was set up, you don't have to play here if you don't want to. I mean, no one's making you play. But, of course, if you're a tour player and you're a member of the PGA Tour and you want to be successful in this game, you're going to play. And you just have to deal with it. And you need to find a way that you're able to play your best.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you in concept with everything that you described in terms of architectural philosophy and design. My personal feeling is that the easiest golf course to design is the hardest golf course to play. Basically, what you do is you take away options. And there is some element of that there, and I think that's kind of why I like the way you described kind of a love-hate relationship. I do have tremendous respect for what you described from the chess game perspective, but there is elements of it that I think are like, nah, depending on some circumstances and conditions that you get, the options are taken away, which makes it a little less fun. But having said all that, and you duly explaining that any player of any ability at the level that these players are at can grasp the brass ring this week, I'm going to ask you the difficult question. Okay, well, I'll give you three to broaden the spectrum, but give me three players that you think are going to potentially win this week.
Well, I think we could, in the history of this event, have the first back-to-back winner in Scottie Scheffler. I followed him 3 days last weekend, and just, I mean, we know his number one ranked player in the world. There's so much to Scottie Scheffler that I don't think we truly understand and what makes him such a good player. I've gotten to know his family and everything, and I understand a lot more about him. I think he's maybe one of the most grounded people that has played this game. I mean, certainly you'd say that about Jack Nicklaus but there's just something about Scottie Scheffler and a lot of these players, and I'm not saying no one else has this. There's a humbleness to him and his understanding that he is playing this game for a living, and he's darn good at it, and he wants to win every time he's out there. But also the understanding that when he's off the golf course, you know, it's about his family. And you know, I asked him after he won last week, Matty, and he and his wife Meredith are going to have their first child in a little over a month at the end of April, and you know, I asked them, I said, you know, you went out here, you've done all this, but you're going to be a father. And he just, you know, he kind of smiled and I'm not saying, I'm not trying to single him out from anyone else, but I don't know if it's through, you know, my family, and I've seen how families interact and how his, there's something very special about this guy. And obviously he's an unbelievably talented golfer. And that's what's, you know, when you hear all this chatter about his putting and all this, and I just kind of blow that off. But certainly I think he, you know, he's obviously the favorite, but I think he's capable of becoming the first back-to-back winner here in this history. Not multiple winner. We've had numerous multiple winners, but the first back-to-back winner. I like, you know, what Dom said earlier, I do like Jordan Spieth. I followed him last week for a couple of rounds. It's that the game is tightening up a little bit. I think his imagination is what can help him on this golf course. And I think Xander Schauffele, who outside of his first event here, when first time he played here, hasn't had a lot of success, but his ball striking is so important. And that's something that I think could eventually carry him to a victory here.
Awesome stuff, Carney. I tell you, we cannot wait to see and hear your work, which will start from Thursday morning, PGA Tour Live, which you can find on ESPN Plus. Thank you so much for your time. I'm looking forward to you joining me after the Players when we're back on Golf Channel again to recount everything that you saw and heard from the week that was. But for the week that lies in store, we're, as I mentioned, very much looking forward to what you do because you are excellent at it. Thank you for your time.
Matty, anytime, my friend. See you next week.
Appreciate that. Maybe even bump into you this week, too, if possible. Thank you to all of you for joining us on this Tuesday of the Players as well. Obviously, you can tell that we're excited about everything that lies in store. I hope you guys are. And we'll be back with you again tomorrow to continue our discussion and to give reaction to everything that took place today, which includes that press conference by the commissioner of the PGA Tour, Jay Monahan. And until that time, we wish you to be well and goodbye for now.